Shalom everyone. Today I want to talk to you about prohibitions. Why does the Torah prohibit us from doing so many things? We can't drive on Shabbat, we can't eat whatever we want, we can do whatever we want with whomever we want. There are things we can't do, there are places we can't go, things we can't say. Why so many prohibitions? This is a very pertinent, very deep question about the very essence of Judaism. The reason is that out of the 613 commandments in the Torah, the majority are negative commandments, things that we are not supposed to do. There are 248 positive commandments, the things that we should do, and 365 negative commandments. So why is it like this? And this is so felt in Jewish life that for many people, their whole experience of what Judaism is all about and what the Torah is all about is that they see it as a sort of series of do-nots, of things you can do and things you shouldn't do. And they feel that the Torah and even even God himself is a kind of police officer, that wherever you want to go, he sort of places a stop sign or a no entrance sign, and he says, here you can't go. So we need to get a better, deeper understanding of what prohibitions are really about. What does it mean that there are things that we're not supposed to do? We're not supposed to go there. What does it do to us on a spiritual level, and what is the deeper meaning of all these prohibitions? So I'm going to offer a few perspectives on this, going deeper all the time, that help us get a better understanding of this whole topic. So we want to go deep, but we want to start simple. We want to start with the most basic understanding, explanation of why is it that the Torah has negative commandments. And the reason is very simple. All the prohibitions are meant to keep us away from negative things. They're meant to protect us, to guide us, so that we don't go into places we shouldn't go. So the world is full of many, many things that we can do, that if we so wish, we can dedicate our lives to them, we can dedicate a whole bunch of time to them, and even feel that we benefit from them for a certain time. And yet the Torah wants to warn us that although they may seem beneficial, in the long run, they are not really so. They're undesirable, they're unbeneficial, both to yourself and to other people. Some of these things are very obvious, and we can all agree on them. The Ten Commandments, they say things like, do not kill, and do not steal, and do not commit adultery. And these are things that we can basically all agree that they are negative. And there's no moral system in the world that doesn't include in some way or another these principles. Other things are not so obvious why they're prohibited. It's not obvious why it's prohibited to eat dairy products with meat products. It's not obvious why it's prohibited to light a fire on Shabbat or to turn on an electrical appliance on Shabbat. But the thing is that the difference between these two things, that could be a great topic for another video. But here, the point is that the Torah is not prohibiting us from doing things that we know intuitively or based on our cultural experience, we know that they are bad. The Torah warns us against things that the Torah knows that they are bad for us. We are invited in a way to trust the Torah, to know better than us what's good for us, basically, to know that in the longest run, from the highest perspective, after all the human pros and cons have canceled each other out, to know what's good for us, what's good for us, whether it's something that we instinctively know to be wrong, or other things that we can maybe know that they're wrong only after we practice not doing them. But the point, the main point, the basic point is that on the simplest level, is that the Torah is showing us the way that there are many things that are negative, and we need to steer clear of them. Now we still have the question. Okay, but why so many prohibitions? Why more negative commandments than positive commandments? Well, this too has a simple answer. And the answer is that this world has more negative things in it than positive things. We live in a very mundane, very material world. There are many, many seductions and desires at play, and many, many things, a whole host of things, that if we invest ourselves in them, we sort of sink deeper and deeper into this world. And it's really like in almost every crossroads that you are, wherever you are, whatever decision you need to make, it's more than likely that most options that are open to you are negative options. If you really narrow them down, you have fewer good options than you have positive options. You can think about it this way. If you look at the universe, there's far, far more empty space than there are inhabited planets, of which we only know of one right now, right? Which is Earth. There's much more space than Earth. If you look at Earth, there's much more ocean. It covers more of the surface of the Earth than dry land. If you look at dry land, there's far more wild, uninhabited areas than there are inhabited places. And then if you look at the human body, most of the body is the physical animal body that we have, and the brain takes up a smaller part. And within the brain itself, the same ratio or some sort of ratio applies, that most of our brain is, we have it in common with lizards and mammals, and it's the animal brain, and the neocortex, which is like the highest layer of the brain, that's what makes us human. That's what really, this is where the whole moral drama of choosing between good and evil is taking place. It's a very small, small area of the universe. So just as in the universe, there's far, where the meaning lies is a very small area, then generally we can say that this world has more negativity or more things that are empty of meaning, of things that we should really invest ourselves in than the good things. And this is reflected in the Torah, in the fact that there are more prohibitions than positive commandments. So that's the simplest level, that the Torah is warning us that there are just many, many negative things, and it's trying to protect us. So that's the deepest level. Now, a second perspective. Another way to look at the relationship, the true relationship between the positive and the negative commandments, is saying that it's really illusory. It's an illusion that there are more negative commandments than positive ones. That only applies if you count the commandments, if you go by numbers, if you look at it from a quantitative perspective. So from a quantitative perspective, you're right. There's more, just look at the numbers. There's more negative than positive commandments. But on a deeper level, on a qualitative level, it's the opposite. And we can focus on three positive commandments. There are three positive commandments. Each one of them, if you look at its essence and just the sheer expanse of things that they open up to you and the time that it takes to invest in them, each one of them, it takes up far more time and energy and attention than all of the negative commandments put together. I am referring to the three commandments that are addressed, that are described in the Ethics of the Fathers, the famous tractate of the Mishnah. And then it says, at the very beginning, it says that the world stands on three pillars. And the three pillars are the Torah and the service and charity, charitable work. Gemilut Chasadim. So the pillar of the Torah is really referring here to the whole wide world of Torah learning, starting with the Bible, going through the Talmud, each one is sort of bigger ocean, and all the way up to the hidden subterranean reservoir of mystical knowledge that it's in, that is embodied in Kabbalah and Chasidut. This is a massive world of study, of learning, of development, of understanding, of inner growth, that that is embodied in this one commandment of learning Torah. The second pillar, the pillar of service, what is service? So the word service refers to, originally it referred to the service of the tabernacle and then the temples. And that basically is the service of the sacrifices. Now that we don't have the temple, we substituted the sacrifices with prayer. So the pillar of service becomes the pillar of prayer. And prayer, we need to pray three times a day or two times a day if you're a woman. But basically, it's far more than just the actual specific prayers that we need to say. Every time we speak to Hashem, every time we do inner spiritual work, this is also called prayer. So the pillar of prayer is another massive universe. This time it's not so much an intellectual universe, it's an emotional inner work universe of coming closer and closer and closer to Hashem and building a relationship with Hashem, with God. And finally, the third pillar, the pillar of Gmilut Chasadim, of charitable work. Again, that's a whole universe of things that you can do to benefit others, benefit the world, benefit your community. And this can take up all of your life. So these three commandments are all positive commandments, but each one of them opens up a whole massive expanse of doing, of thinking, of learning, of developing, that takes up much more, infinitely more of our attention, of our life, of our hearts and minds, than do the prohibitions. The prohibitions are simply boundaries. So there are many boundaries. It's like a fence, like a picket fence. There are a lot of pickets in the picket fence, but on the whole, it creates a space. And what you do in that space is far more meaningful than the fence surrounding this space. So again, on a quantitative level, there are more negative commandments, but a qualitative level, especially if you look at those three commandments we said, then the positive becomes much, much greater. Another interesting perspective comes from Chassidut. So in Chassidut, there's something very beautiful and important is said. It's said that these two clusters, these two groups of commandments, the positive and the negative, they all descend from the two most basic emotions or ways of referring or relating to Hashem that are called love and fear. There's the love of God and there's the fear of God. So the idea is that all the positive commandments are basically, they all come out of the love of God. When you put on tefillin, when you take up the four species in Sukkot, when you say a blessing, whenever you do a positive commandment, something that the Torah commands us to do, you are expressing your love to God. So all these commandments come out of this feeling of love to God, whereas all the negative commandments are all expressions of a basic feeling of fear, or a better word is awe. If you have awe, then fear sounds like the fear of punishment. We're not talking about the fear of punishment at all. We're talking about a feeling of awe towards God. So when you're abstaining from eating something that is forbidden, when you're abstaining from doing something that violates the Shabbat, when you're abstaining from saying something that's bad that you shouldn't say, when you're doing all this, you are expressing, it's coming out of your feeling of yir'ah, awe, the feeling that I do not wish to transgress. I fear Hashem in a deep way. I feel that He has this infinite high presence. I'm afraid also of losing that connection, that relationship that I have with Hashem, that I'm cultivating through my love of Hashem, through doing all the positive commandments. So it's an expression of fear. But here comes the Hasidic twist. The twist is that the commandment to fear Hashem, which is coming from Deuteronomy 10:20, it says, "You shall fear the Lord your God." So the whole idea is that this commandment is a positive commandment. It's a positive commandment to fear God. So it turns out, if all the commandments are coming out of the two commandments of love and fear, then it turns out that all the 365 negative commandments are really branches or, you know, aspects of a positive commandment. Whenever we abstain from doing the things that are prohibited, we are expressing, we are actively doing the positive commandment of having this fear or awe of Hashem, yir'at Hashem or yir'at Shamayim. Sometimes it's also called the fear of sinning, yir'at chit. It's not that we are afraid of God. God is not, He's not something to be afraid of. But we are afraid of the sin itself. This is called yir'at chit. We are afraid of the sin because the sin blemishes the world and blemishes our own souls. So this is another perspective, beautiful perspective, that the first level was that the prohibitions protect you from negative things. The second was that it's really a mistake. It's an illusion. It's an optical illusion to think that there are more negative than positive commandments, because qualitatively it's the opposite. Now we're saying that it's all positive, because all the negative commandments are really an expression of the positive act of displaying awe towards God. Now, to all of this, I want to add something else. And this is it is really a metaphor that I sort of came up with a while ago, and for me it was very eye-opening. And this is likening the commandments to the aperture within the camera. So the aperture is the mechanism within the camera that is responsible for determining how much light comes into the camera, how much light the photograph is exposed to. It's made up of a series of shutters that are in a circle, and they create a little space in between. And the way the shutter works is it could be automatic, it could be manual, but those shutters can be moved, and then the opening becomes smaller or bigger. It depends on how you move the shutters. And the more, if you close it all the way, then no light comes in. And if you open it all the way, then a lot of light comes in. And most photographs that you see, it's somewhere in between. You have to find the right amount of light. Basically, the aperture is an imitation of the human pupil, the pupil in the eye. The pupil in the eye also dilates and contracts depending on how much light we have. Whenever we're in a dark room, then it dilates very much because we need to take in as much light as we can to see what's going on. And if we go out into a place that has a lot of light, it contracts so that we're not blinded. And that's why it takes a little bit of time to get used to the light or get used to the dark, right? So what is this connection to our topic? The connection is that we can think about the prohibitions of the Torah as the shutters of the aperture. And then the positive commandments become the opening of the aperture. Now, the object, the purpose of the shutters, what do they do? They block the light. So this doesn't sound too positive. That's what the negative commandments do. They block the light. But if you think about it, though, their whole purpose is that they're serving the space, the opening that's at the very center. They're around the center. They create the opening, and they serve the opening. Their whole purpose is to block light so that the right amount of light centers, concentrates, and goes into the opening. And the same goes for the prohibitions. They block the light, but their purpose is not to block anything. Their purpose is to really direct the light, to focus the energy that we have and the energy that's in the world so that it goes through in the best possible way. It limits our own energy of where we can take our energy. We want to go everywhere and do everything, and it tells us, no, you can't go here and there. But then it directs you into the right place. And it also, looking at it from the other direction, it takes all the energy of the world and it says you need to take in a certain amount of energy. You don't need to see everything and experience everything. You need to focus on this one opening. So this is a very, I think, beautiful way of understanding the commandments. Now, note this. The purpose of the aperture in Judaism is it's never supposed to be fully closed. If it's fully closed, no light comes in. This, you can say this about certain religions that are very ascetic. They're all about withdrawing from the world, withdrawing from society, or focusing just on spirituality. If you want to be a hermit somewhere, you want to be a monk somewhere, then this is like closing the aperture all the way, or almost all the way, because I don't know of any religion that would tell you to kill yourself, but many religions tell you to live on the edge if you want to be really, really holy. So holiness is equated with closing the aperture as much as possible. This is not the purpose of Judaism. On the other hand, Judaism is not about opening the aperture wide open. This is what happens in very materialistic, hedonistic societies that are all about just do whatever you want, have as many experiences, you know, eat everything and drink everything and do whatever you want as long as you don't hurt others. So just a little bit of closing that you don't hurt other people. But you're not supposed to do much beyond that. You're just supposed to have a lot of fun as long as you don't hurt other people. So this is like a wide open aperture. But the point of the Jewish aperture, we can say, is that it finds a beautiful balance in order to redirect the desires that we have in us. And the point is to soften them and to refine them and to make them more delicate and to elevate them, to sublimate them. So we want to give room to the to the desires. We want to give room to the physicality of the world and to our humanity, the fact that we have those desires. We're not shutting the shutter, the shutters, the aperture, and we're not opening it all the way up. We're giving room to play, and we're giving affirmation to our humanity and to our desires. But on the other hand, we want to refine them and elevate them. And this is beautifully, beautifully expressed in a midrash, in an exegetical interpretation of this week's parasha, which is called Parashat Shmini. So the Torah says that there's a verse in Psalms that says, Hashem matir asurim, God releases prisoners, right? So it's a blessing that the Psalms pay to God, that God releases prisoners. But if you just take the word prisoners, in Hebrew it's asurim, and if you just change a little bit the way it's read, it's written the same way, just read it a little bit differently, you change the punctuation mark, the word asurim becomes isurim. Isurim is prohibitions. So then it turns out that you can read the verse not just as saying that God releases prisoners, Hashem matir asurim, but also God undoes God undoes the isurim. He cancels his own prohibitions. Hashem matir isurim. He gives us the prohibitions, but he also cancels them. So what does it mean, and how does it connect to everything we said? So the Midrash shows us that it gives a list of negative commandments, things that are prohibited, and then it shows that the way Jewish law works is that although they are prohibited, each one of them takes the desire to transgress it, the desire that it's trying to refine, and it doesn't completely prohibit it. It redirects it in a more subtle, more refined direction. So the best example given there is that it says we can't eat pork. Right? We all know this. You can't eat pork. However, there is a kosher kind of fish. That's what it says in the Midrash. There's a certain kind of fish. It's called the shibuta. I don't know what it is in modern English or even Hebrew for that matter. But there's a certain type of fish. It's the principle that counts. There's a certain type of fish that tastes like pork. Now, a fish has a far more, finer, more refined, more subtle flesh to it. It's not as coarse as pork flesh. So the idea is that you can't eat pork, but God listens to you, that he sees that you really want to eat pork and you really like the flavor. So he created this kind of fish that is kosher. You can eat it, and it has the same flavor, but you need to refine. If your desire is you want to eat specifically pork meat, that you can do. But it's not completely prohibited. It's not completely negated. It's just that it's blocked. It's limited, and then you need to refine yourself, and then you can do with that fish. The fish will be enough. You don't need to eat the pork. Another example, it says you can't marry or have relations with a married woman, right? This is called adultery. This is prohibited. It's a very, very bad thing. However, the Torah did allow us, this doesn't go without saying, some cultures, some religions don't allow this. It says you may marry a divorcee or a widow. So what's the connection? The idea is that if a man marries a divorcee or a widow, there's a little bit of the desire to take someone else's woman, but in a way that's allowed, that's absolutely kosher, because she's either divorced or widowed. So there's no adultery at all, but there's a little bit of the desire. If Judaism would not have allowed you to marry, if Judaism would say you can't commit adultery, but you also can't marry someone who was divorced or who was widowed, then that kind of desire, it's called in Hebrew, Maim gnuvim im taku. There's a sweetness to stolen water. This is a verse in Proverbs. Maim gnuvim im taku. There's a certain sweetness to water that's stolen. This is not a good thing, but it's a natural thing. It's part of human life. We have this kind of desire to steal. So we can't steal. you can't commit adultery, but there are certain scenarios in which the, in a way, or a very, very refined version of that desire is allowed. It's a beautiful, beautiful midrash that shows how brilliantly the Torah is like an aperture. It's taking our desires and it redirects them in ways that you can't go all the way with your desire, but they're not repressed or negated altogether either. The Torah is not about repressing the desire, it's about refining the desire. So this is a very important midrash. I'm going to finish, to sum this all up, and as a kind of dessert for this class, I want to share with you a little diagram that I prepared a few years ago that reflects how I perceive the Shabbat. So the Shabbat, at the heart of the Shabbat, there is a positive commandment to rest on Shabbat, lishbot, to rest on Shabbat. But the way Shabbat is built is that it's made up really of a negative commandment, which is do not do any work on Shabbat. And the question is, what exactly is work? So work is, the definition is that there are 39 types of work. It's called lametet avot melacha, 39 general actions that are prohibited to do on Shabbat. This includes plowing the land and sowing and hunting and riding and erasing. It's a 39 basic actions. All of the details of what you can and can't do on Shabbat, it's all coming out of these 39 negative actions, the things that you can't do on Shabbat. So in order to reflect this, I made a diagram that has the word ken in Hebrew. Ken means yes, with an exclamation mark, a big yes with an exclamation mark that's made up of 39 little lo. Lo is no. So it's basically, it's a big yes made up of 39 little lo, or no's. So now you can look at this diagram and say, well, it's like a gestalt diagram, right? You can look at it from two different directions. You can say, is it one big yes, or is it a lot of little no's? And the answer is, of course, it's both. Elu ve'elu dvarei Elokim chayim. These and these are words of the living God. If you look only at the details, only at the trees and not the forest, then all you see is a whole bunch of lo, a whole bunch of no's. You can't do this and you can't do that and don't go this and don't go there. But if you distance yourself a little bit and you look at the big picture, or alternatively, you close your eyes a little bit, like a shutter, like an aperture, and so it blurs the picture, all you see is one big happy yes. So with this sort of diagram and this idea, I leave you now, that we tried in this class to look at the whole concept of prohibitions, the fact that there are so many prohibitions in Judaism, and wanted to take a few deeper looks, understanding of it. And so I wish you all a very happy Shabbat Shalom, and I hope you liked this video. If you did, please press like, share it with your friends, subscribe to the channel, and I hope that you're leaving this class with a little bit of a better understanding of why the Torah has so many prohibitions and why they're really, really good for us. So Shabbat Shalom. This video was made possible through the kind support of my sponsors over at Patreon. Patreon is a great way to help independent creators like myself produce original content. If you'd like to get more English language videos from me, please consider becoming a supporter via Patreon. You can find the link in the description below. Thank you very much.